This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Our guest co-host, J. Randall Murphy, and some people have asked me whether I'm making a permanent decision with regard to the co-host, and I will say that Randall's going to be a big part of what we do in the future, but right now we're not announcing anything, so we'll see how we decide that. And anyway, we get some great reaction to last week's episode. And this week we've got something interesting, and it has a lot of nuance to it. So we have Cary Trent Haggard. He's co-author with Johnny Dale Cochran II. No relationship to that Johnny Cochran from California, late lawyer.
No relation to the lawyer.
The book is called Traveler, published by Flying Disc Press, our old friend Philip Mantle. And it's an interesting story, which I guess is fiction. Is that right, Cary?
Well, Traveler is historical fiction. The 1897 sections are based as closely as I could get them on the historical happenings of what happened April 17, 1897. The 1997 sections are totally fictional that were made up by John and myself.
Is this kind of like a time jump sort of story then?
Yes, it goes back and forth for 100 years. What happened was this girl reporter in Gainesville, Texas in 1997 finds the ancient newspaper article, the original actual newspaper article, and her editor sends her over to Aurora to find out what the story is, find out where this alien is buried, and then we do a lot of flashbacks in the novel to 1897 when the events actually happen.
So you're proceeding under the assumption here that whatever happened in 1897 did involve an extraterrestrial.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that wholeheartedly. I believe that early in the morning on April 17, 1897, a single alien vessel crashed into the water tower in Aurora, Texas, and died. I believe that they buried him in the local cemetery because the good townsfolk of the time knew that was the only thing, the only right thing they could do. And I believe that the remainder of his craft was dumped down a well a few years later. And then the well was cleaned out in 1957. But yes, I believe that wholeheartedly that the incident happened.
Well, you know, it's been a very controversial episode. And there's a general perception here that it may not have happened.
Yes, that's true. And I spoke to, I was lucky enough to speak to Jim Mars, who I guess had done more research on the Aurora incident than any man alive before he died. A couple of years ago, I spoke to him, told him of the novel I was writing and how it involved Aurora and how part of it was fictional, but part of it, a large part of it, was based on the historical fact. And he was so glad that somebody was doing something to bring attention to the Aurora incident because he wholeheartedly, too, believed that it happened.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good documentary, I think, on YouTube about it, where he goes there and you can see him wandering around. There's even pictures of the old stone that they found over the alleged gravesite.
He'd done documentaries on it. He'd done interviews. He'd done presentations at some of the MUFON events on Aurora. And he was pretty well researched in it.
Oh, yeah. So your novel then is kind of a docufiction type of thing. So that it's got some entertainment value as well as some sort of mystery that has some actual history in it.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because the novel was never really meant to be a novel. The novel was written as a screenplay. My co-author and I, we at the time, which we'll get to in a few minutes, we had some time on our hands. So we were telling our stories from our past, and I was documenting those, and then he told me of the Aurora incident. So over the course of a few months, we wrote the screenplay for Traveler. We wrote a movie for Traveler, and everybody that read it loved it so much. They said, you got to expand this into a novel. So I spent 2 years after that working on it, developing the characters, and making a full-fledged novel. And then luckily, thankfully, Philip Mantle from Flying Disc Press was recommended to me to send it to. And when I sent it, I sent him the introduction, and he said, Terry, he said, if the rest of the novel reads as good as your introduction, I would love to publish your book. And so that's how Traveler got published, and that's why it's on Amazon today.
Well, of course, we know that Philip Mantle is one of the good guys in British UFO research. Now, in putting together your version of what happened in Aurora in 1897, then did you rely on any other sources other than Jim Mars to kind of put this all together?
Well, I watched everything that had ever been done on Aurora. I read everything I could possibly read. Of course, I read the original newspaper articles published in the Dallas and the Fort Worth papers. And then I tried to imagine, I took all the facts, and then I tried to imagine how the good people of Aurora, Texas, just a couple decades after the Civil War, would react to an extraterrestrial falling out of the sky when, at that time, the fastest mode of transportation was a train that clacked along at 40 miles an hour, and the only thing that could fly was birds. I tried to envision how they would cope with it, how they would react to it, and how they would deal with such an event. And that's the way I wrote it in the novel.
Did you know that they made a movie and of that, I believe, back in 1986?
Yes, horrible. I watched the first 10 minutes and turned it off. It was a joke.
It is horrible.
It's horrible. Absolutely terrible. I watched 10 minutes and turned it off. I said, that has nothing to do with the Aurora or the actual Aurora crash. It was just a joke. So, no, as far as I'm concerned, they've never done anything on it.
Yeah, I think at one point they've got the little alien guy coming out and he gets into a checkers game and some moonshine with one of the characters. And at the end, he gets shot, and that's why he crashes his ship, because somebody just, with a loose trigger finger, shoots the alien. So, you know, from your research, did anyone actually see the alien, or was it simply just a crash, and then they sort of had to do a cleanup afterwards?
Well, the way I wrote the story, there was one witness. There was an old cowboy that had wandered through the night and stepped out of the bar just as it crashed, and a little boy in a field. And there were stories of a young man in a field that saw the vessel come roaring over underneath as he was outside working early in the morning and heard the crash. But his father wouldn't let him go into town because they had to finish their chores. That's an old legend that was told at the time. So I sort of incorporated that into the story. And actually, the young boy turned out to be the great-great-grandfather of some of the boys in the 1997 section. So I sort of weaved all that together. But as far as actual witnesses, I don't know. They didn't mention any of the newspapers. I gave it a couple of those.
So shall we say then that you took a few artistic liberties, they say?
Well, yeah, I wanted to make the story interesting. I wanted to make it entertaining. Again, I want to make the movie out of this. My fondest wish is for somebody to read the novel and say, wow, this would make a great film, and be interested in helping me get that accomplished somewhere down the road.
We've got more to come. The book is Traveler. We're talking with one of the authors, Cary Trent Haggard. Will it be a movie? Our special co-host is J. Randall Murphy. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Here is what one satisfied customer had to say about Heart and Body Extract regarding his angina pain.
I haven't had an angina pain since I've been on it. The Heart and Body Extract is just so great. I thank God that I was led to this product that's doing so much for me and that can do so much for other people.
Call to order your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Want revenge on the common housefly? Well, after 10,000 years, someone has finally come up with a better way. The Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic and no batteries required. So much fun, you'll forget you have a wife and kids. $39.95 and free economy shipping. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey Guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I like the way, Randall, that you emphasize the second paragraph, the second syllable, as you say that. In any case,
learning something from James T. Kirk.
Scotty, beam me up. Actually, what really happened here is with Star Trek. No, I don't want to do a Star Trek reference because somebody in the forums is complaining that I do too many Star Trek references. I don't do that many. But
let's
then
do more. I think Star Trek's awesome. I think we should do them all through the entire show.
Oh, my gosh. I love Star Trek. All through my life, you know, the big question is Star Wars or Star Trek, and I've always been Star Trek. I love the Star Trek. You know, that's always been my favorite.
How about UFOs in general? Now, had you been into them much before you heard this story about the crash in Aurora?
Well, see, I witnessed one when I was a kid, when I was 9 years old in Commerce, Georgia, landing, which is a whole big section of the introduction that I write about.
I think you should tell us about that.
Oh, I will. I will. You are we still on or are we taking a break?
Oh, we're on.
Oh, we're on. Okay. Well, you want to hear that story then? I'll start with that one if you'd like.
Let's do it.
Well, my fascination, my belief in UFOs began in 1974. My father worked for Westinghouse Electric. He was always fascinated with the local cop, and he had a realistic band scanner beside his recliner, and that thing ran night and day. Weather reports and the antics of the local police and the fire department and all this stuff. And later on, he actually worked part-time for the police department for 19 years. But anyway, this was like 1974, and there had been a reported, documented, witnessed landing of a UFO in Danielsville, Georgia. Danielsville, Georgia is 12 miles from where I grew up. But within a month or two, there was chatter in Jackson County, Commerce, which is where I live, that low-flying objects were appearing almost nightly. One night, frantic police calls came into the police department that a flaming object had landed in the parking lot of Medical Center Clinic. Now, the Medical Center Clinic they spoke of was the same hospital facility that my mother worked at. She'd been a licensed practical nurse since 1955. And so I, you know, we all hear this. I'm jumping up and down. I'm begging for her to take me to see what happens. So we jumped in her 1969 green unpaneled station wagon and went tearing off over there. And it was only a couple of miles. So by the time we got there, probably 7-8 minutes had passed between the time that these calls that came into police headquarters and the time we got there. When we got there, it was a fire truck, two police cars, and a few other cars from locals that had heard the same, evidently had heard the same broadcast. But down in the lower corner of the parking lot on the asphalt was a huge 30-foot diameter smoking circle where something incredibly hot had literally melted the asphalt. All around the outside of it were drippings where silver, like lead, drops melted into the asphalt. I'll never forget that. That was the most vivid memory of my childhood. And a crew came in there two nights later in the middle of the night and repaved the entire parking lot. My mom came home on Monday and said, "You'll never believe what they did. They went in there during the night and repaved the entire parking lot." I saw that. That wasn't something I heard about, read in the paper. It was something I saw with my own two eyes when I was like 9 years old. So from that moment, I was a true believer in the enigma of UFOs. And when I heard about Aurora, it was my chance to sort of give back something, to write and to sensationalize a little bit the Aurora incident.
We're continuing here with our discussion of the book Traveler and how things came to pass. Now, are you familiar with someone named Hayden C. Hughes?
No, I'm not. I've heard that name before, but I don't know who that is.
Well, way back when, I think in the 70s, he got a lot of national publicity promising to make hay out of the Aurora episode. And, you know, it turned out to be nothing. He got his publicity, he got his 10 minutes of fame, and kind of sort of disappeared. But no, you never heard of him. All right, well, that's where you go. I think whatever he tried to do didn't work so well. But I'm going to ask you quickly here, now that we've kind of had the background here, tell us more about what happens in your book to bring it up to date.
Okay. Well, like I said, this girl reporter, this young, good-looking girl reporter over in Gainesville, Texas, she does a column. It's called A Century in the News, where she writes interesting epithets on articles that happened 100 years ago. So she digs through the archives of the newspaper and finds stuff and tries to make little columns every week. Well, she runs across this, which just fascinates her. So she prints off the story. She takes it to her editor. He's a UFO buff, so he immediately says, okay, you need to go over there and find him. So she goes over, and she starts digging around, and the sheriff and the game warden have been trying to keep this thing quiet for years. Of course, the FBI has been over there trying to find his grave, and they don't want him. They don't want them to take him, and it's just a little country town secret that they're trying to keep a secret. But every now and then, somebody comes sniffing around asking all these questions. Well, she gets the help of two cousins, and the cousins, actually, their great-great-grandfather was the one that witnessed the crash and stole a piece of the broken-up spaceship. And so the tale goes on and on and on, and finally they recover the remains of the extraterrestrial and try to find a safe place to relocate him where the feds can't get a hold of him. So that's the entertaining, fictional 1997 part. But there are a lot of chapters in the novel that go back to 1897, and they're pretty much historically accurate as to how the events could have unfolded.
So what do you think about it all at this point? What does anyone do at this point to prove whether or not Aurora happened? It was a real event. That'd be very interesting to explore. And the reason I bring that to the forefront is over the years, at least in recent years, the stories of the Aurora, Texas crash have been regarded pretty much as just that, a story, not something that ever really happened. I'm going to explore that in our next segment. So we're talking with the author of Traveler. Remember, it's docudrama or fiction based on fact or something like that. And the authors are Cary Trent Haggard and Johnny Dale Cochran II. Cary will be back in a moment with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@GCNlive.com.
If you like alkaline water, or know someone that does, you're going to love the Dillon Living Water Bottle. It creates alkaline water on the go while reducing plastic waste and saving you money. Made with surgical-grade stainless steel, the Dillon Bottle increases the pH up to 9 to deliver both alkaline and antioxidant water anywhere you want it. Alkaline water is healthier, tastes better, and can even boost energy. The Dillon Bottle makes it easy and affordable to be healthy and achieve optimal hydration. Get your Dillon Bottle today at dyln.co. That's dyln.co.
USA Radio News.
We're doing a phase two. We'll be doing it probably in October, maybe a little sooner than that. And it'll be more of a middle class. We did a lot for the middle class, but this will be even more aimed at the middle class. One of the things we're thinking about is bringing the 21% down to 20. And then for the most part, the rest of it would go right to the middle class.
President Trump on Fox Business when discussing a possible phase two to his tax cut plan. Today, people all across the country were protesting President Trump's immigration plan. Dr. Martin Luther King's niece, Alveda King, was asked if all this civil discourse could lead to violence.
It could erupt into violence if we don't keep level heads. You know, my uncle, Martin Luther King Jr., we've talked about this before. He said, I've decided to stick with love. Hate is too difficult a burden to bear. Daddy King in Atlanta at the boiling point said, we've got to become the city that's too busy to hate.
This is USA Radio News.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-561-5716. That's 800-561-5716. Again, 800-561-5716.
It's been said, any society is only three missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And a crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, at this late stage, we're talking about something that happened in 1897. It's 2018 when we record this episode. How do we, after all these years, prove whether any of this happened?
Well, there's no way to prove that it did happen. The Texas Historical Society, they must feel like it happened because there's a national monument placed there that talks about the incident. They have had teams out there with ground penetrating radar. And in the spot where the extraterrestrial is buried, there is a small body buried there. But the Aurora City Council has strictly forbidden anybody to exhume that body because they do not want that happening. So there's really no way to prove that it's an actual event, and there's no way to disprove either. I mean, it was reported in the local newspaper at the time. It's been talked about ever since, on and off. So is it fact? Is it fiction? I can't tell you. I know Jim Mars believed it was true. I know I believe it was true, but is there any way to nail the lid shut on it? I don't know.
That site, too, when you were talking about the ground-penetrating radar, from what I recall, they actually had picked up some sort of signal from metal there. They had metal detectors out there. And then they thought, well, okay, this is really interesting. And a few days later, they'd had some guards posted there because they didn't want people digging it up when they found that. And then a few days later, it turns out that somebody had managed to get in there, according to one article, and extract the metal pieces out of the gravesite somehow with some sort of tube, metal tubes or something, without actually having to dig up the whole thing. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I read the same thing. Somebody went in there in the middle of the night. They must have snuck in through the back. That's when the gravestone, the original gravestone that was put there on the extraterrestrial's grave in 1897 that had a cigar-shaped craft carved into the rock was stolen. So somebody went in there and stole the gravestone and somehow or another managed to get this metal, these metal fragments, out of the ground. Now, was it federal government that went in there to debunk this, to make sure there was no proof for anybody else to find? Was it a fanatic that went in there? Who knows? I don't know. I have a theory that the gravestone is probably within 10 miles of where it was stolen. There's a lawyer in Fort Worth that's offered a $1,000 reward for the return of the gravestone. I think that a lot of the reason the gravestone was stolen was to try to quiet things up a bit. I don't know about the metal fragments. I read the same thing you did. They stuck a piece of pipe in the ground and drove it down and was able to retrieve them. Somebody went to a lot of trouble to do all that. Why and who, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like a rather sophisticated way of extracting just specific bits of material from a site. If it was just grave robbers or something, they'd just go in there and dig it up and take whatever they could find. But, you know, this sort of extraction method is kind of unusual. I've never heard of anything quite like it.
Right.
Even if we don't know what was down there, we do know that some of these things happened. Like, there's certain things that you could believe are historically factual surrounding the case in that sense. Even if it, let's say, is an urban legend or an urban myth, there's still some interesting history around it in terms of what people believe and the way the stories are told and the things like this that have happened.
Right. And the description of the extraterrestrial at the time was the typical description of the gray. I mean, it was the large head, the no hair, the small ears, the small nose. Those old cowboys out there at the time, they didn't make all that up. They wouldn't have known how to make all that up. That is a really good point, because them old cowboys, they didn't know about graves. They didn't know about the carvings in ancient Egypt. They didn't know about the graves that had been visiting us for centuries. This was the description of what they found, of the being that they found. And it matched perfectly. The long arms, the slender fingers, the real small being, you know, they didn't have no way of knowing all that. How would they have made that up?
I don't know. I don't recall that level of detail in the actual news story, though, of the occupant. Is that in the original news story, or was that something that came out later from investigation?
That was what Jim Morris told me that it had been reported at the time. There was all kinds of reportings going on, not just in the newspaper, but handed down through the locals of the time. And that was the description that they were giving. So it was the typical gray description.
That's interesting. I think what Gene had started getting us into as well is this sort of idea. Does fiction drive UFO mythology, or do real events inspire UFO entertainment? Like, which comes first? In this case, it seems to be something that happened quite a long time ago.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, in my research, and here's the thing, in my research to do my novel, I found dozens and dozens of accounts of UFOs and alien landings, and from the Civil War on up through the 1870s and 1880s and 1890s leading up to Aurora. I've actually got one here that... Okay, so in my research to Wright Traveler, I ran across dozens, if not hundreds, of accounts of UFOs in the Old West, alien landings and such, from the Civil War through the 1870s, 1880s. I've got a real good one here from September 1864. A fur trapper named James Loomney watched a sky rocket streak through the sky above the Great Falls of Upper Missouri, which moments later crashed with a monstrous explosion that shook the entire forest and emitted such heat on impact that it turned the ground to glass. reported in the September Cincinnati Commercial, the next morning Looney was astonished to find a widespread path of destruction cut through the forest several rods wide. He went on to describe the object at the end of it as divided into compartments and carved with hieroglyphics similar to those found in the writings of ancient Egypt. So that's from 1864. So all, you know, there's been hundreds of reports, even back in the old West, of flying saucers and extraterrestrial landings. It's nothing new.
That's pretty interesting. That sounds a lot like the Kecksburg case.
Yes.
That acorn-shaped kind of thing they thought was a meteor at first came down and went into the forest, and it had similar kind of markings on it as well.
Yeah. And that was right here. That was right here in Pennsylvania, where I'm living now. So, yeah, I've heard all about that.
Yeah, they've got a kind of a sculpture of the thing right there as well, too. So these cases have been going on for quite a while.
And we're going to talk about that in more detail in a moment. Okay. Our guest co-host is J. Randall Murphy. Our guest is Carrie Trent Haggard. The book is called Traveler, with so much more to come. Now, somewhat later in the show, we're going to reveal something that you may not know about Trent's past, and something that came as a surprise to us, but something that you might find fascinating, okay? Has nothing to do with UFOs or his hobby of vintage cars. Something fascinating, something you might not have expected. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX, or my website, danpilla.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original, most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Get the ultimate knife at an ultimate price. The Fox Karambit Knife. Finally available in the U.S., the Fox Karambit Knife opens with one hand, faster than you can pull a handgun. For utility, for defense, and for way less than other knives of this caliber, go to TheUltimateKnife.com. Truly the best knife you will ever own. And only available at TheUltimateKnife.com. Use promo code RADIO at checkout for free shipping. Get the ultimate knife at the ultimate price at TheUltimateKnife.com.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family?
Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-910-5936. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-910-5936. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-910-5936. 1-800-910-5936.
Ted Anderson telling you about Jordan Rubin's Beyond Organic Green-Fed Raw Cheddar Artesian Cheese featuring whole milk created through ancient dairy breeding. Unpasteurized, untreated whole milk on the same farm the cows graze. Containing natural sources of omega-3s, CLA protein, calcium, probiotics, and enzymes. I have never tasted cheese this good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Just to let you know here, we are having the usual Skype connection problems, and so we're trying to undisjoint the interview as much as possible. Randall, go ahead, please.
Yeah, we were just talking about how the early airship wave kind of morphed into modern ufology, and the connection between that and does fiction drive the mythology, or does the mythology drive the fiction, or does real life cases, in case of some of them that are pretty much verifiable, do they drive the UFO dogma, so to speak? We've got actually a question on that from one of our forum people, and I'll just read that kind of briefly here, and then we can get your comment on it, Carrie. He says, skeptics claim that we see UFOs and aliens because we consume too much fictional entertainment. By that logic, we should be seeing UFOs who look like Batman vehicles or aliens who look like DC's Marvel's superheroes. Universes since superheroes have never taken science fiction as a number one fictional entertainment idea or media. So I think he makes a pretty valid point there. If it's sci-fi driving UFO reports, how come they don't look like typical sci-fi objects?
Well, and that is a good point in modern day, but there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these accounts way before television. So, if you go back to the ones, they're consistent throughout the 1300s, the 1500s, and the 1800s. Today, people, a lot of people like to sensationalize on anything, but today they do go by a lot of that. But, how do you explain the ones 200 years ago?
I think it's pretty fair to say, there are skeptics, and I think it's pretty fair to say that quite a few of the reports probably were fictional. If you read Kevin Randall's blog, I'm not sure if you know who he is, but he's done some research and basically found that the person who wrote the original article essentially claimed he made it up. Yeah, it's just fiction. If you know who Jerome Clark is, he's done quite a bit of study on the airship wave. It's like one of his pet projects. And it's known that the newspaper reporters at the time were making up stories just to sell papers and get interest in various locales. So I think it's fair to say probably quite a few of them were just stories that were made up. But maybe this one slipped through the cracks. Maybe it's a boy who cried wolf kind of thing. Like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of ones that are fiction, but maybe there is one that actually made it through that was real.
That's true. It could be either way. It could have been the entire thing could have been made up, but there were hundreds of accounts from California, starting in, 1896 or 94, and they're pretty much consistent. Some of the terrestrials that they had landed They breathed through, they were small, they were short, they had no hair. They breathed through an apparatus while their craft hovered behind them. I can't say for sure whether it was true, whether it was not, whether it was all made up. People make up all kinds of things. I just feel like that a majority of them were probably accurate and that they were seeing UFO craft in the sky.
One of the things Kevin Randall asks here, too, is if there was a bunch of metal from the object that was sort of strewn all over the place, how come we don't have any fragments? You'd think somebody would have picked up something or some bit of souvenir. I mean, it couldn't have all just disintegrated into pieces so small nobody would be able to find them because there was a body involved. So, you know, I mean, a ship would have a lot of parts.
Right. Now, I believe that I don't really know exactly what happened, but the report was that, well, my thing is the fragments of the craft, they could be in Aurora and in the Fort Worth area that they don't are now because they were handed down 121 years ago. Most of the fragments from the craft were dumped down a well. All this is so much speculation. It's impossible to tell where all the fragments are 121 years later.
I guess they did find some fragments. They eventually unsealed that well and found remnants of a sump pump type of an affair. And so they do know that there was some kind of a tower, water tower, or pumping mechanism there. And that there was some fragments that were down in the bottom that had a high content of aluminum, I think. I mean, there weren't many of them, but there was enough to analyze them. And back in those days, aluminum, not a lot of people know this, but aluminum was really expensive. It was more expensive than gold because it was so hard to refine. So for someone back in the 1800s to hoax something with aluminum would have been really expensive to do.
Right. And what would be the point? I mean, really, what would be the point to do back then? You know, the argument has always been this story was made up to save Aurora, which was dying. It had had a crop infestation. It had a fire. The railroad had secured it for another location. Story going to help. It's not like a whole bunch of UFO hunters are going to town and spend a lot of money to see what's going on because nobody cared about nothing like that. They didn't have no way to even publicize that. The whole idea of this was made up.
Right. And in addition, I mean, if they wanted to display it and for people to come and look, rather than trying to cover the whole thing up and pretend it wasn't there, you would think that they would have created something like the Aurora Museum or like they have the Roswell UFO Museum. They might have done the same thing instead of burying it all in the ground and pretending it's not there.
Right. I mean, if they wanted to sensationalize on the thing, why wouldn't they put it on display on the town, on the boardwalk?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to bury it.
No, it makes no sense at all. All these... these cover-up stories they've come up with that the Aurora made it to save a dying town and all this and that, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. I think that the incident happened, but, of course, that's my own opinion.
Looking at this, at least in my crazy perspective, as a skeptic that anything really strange happened at Aurora, obviously they haven't made a big movement towards monetizing this event, then again, keeping it a mystery, putting it in a grave that no one is allowed to open up, that would certainly create an aura of mystery to some people. But it's not as if we realize there's an annual Aurora festival, that any of this legend of a UFO crash did anything but maybe inspire sockets of publicity, get some UFO fans to maybe want to go down there and see what was really going on. But as a practical matter, it didn't help Aurora, Texas. But we still have the mystery. It crops up every few years. and we can have some fun with it. And certainly this book, as I said, is fiction, so it really doesn't matter at the end of the day whether this ever happened. If it didn't happen, so be it. So we really don't know, but it sounds like a fun thing to continue to pursue. At the end of the day, right, we find that there's no evidence to prove that a spaceship crashed at Aurora, then alien was recovered from that spaceship or was involved in any particular way. If it's shown that that didn't happen, it wouldn't affect your book any. But would you be upset over all the work you've done or what?
Oh, no. You know, it's just our culture. It's history. A lot of history has got sidelined. A lot of history has been. I still thought that most, it wouldn't affect me at all. And a lot of history gets covered up, covered over, exaggerated, undertold, and distorted. So it wouldn't bother me at all if it absolutely positively was on CNN tomorrow that the Aurora incident never happened. There's absolute 100% proof. Because I don't see how they could actually come up with 100% proof. But, no, it wouldn't bother me at all.
I don't think we talk about this as much as we should on the Paracast, and that is we have the famous Paracast community forums, where we discuss the show and lots of other stuff, and we also post a thread where you can ask questions of guests. Check it out, forum.theparacast.com, forum.theparacast.com. We've got more to come with Gene Randall and Kerry. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.